This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Storyteller and dancer Patricia Ruby Powell joins us this afternoon with some stories about flowers. Powell has teamed up with illustrator Sarah Dillard to do a book about flowers, the title Blossom Tales, Flower Stories of Many Folk. Some of the stories are about the origins of flowers. Some are about why flowers are as they are. They're enchanting folk tales about flowers, including the rose, lily of the valley, geranium, and dandelion. Let me tell you a little bit more about Patricia. She's currently an Illinois Arts Council artist in residence at Franklin Middle School. And you can meet her this Sunday at 3 o'clock if you haven't already had the pleasure. She'll be at the Barnes & Noble bookstore in Champaign to tell stories and sign books. Patricia, good to see you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks for coming in. Well, what led you to this project?
A love of flowers and being a storyteller. The natural repertory of a storyteller would be folk tales because we can't use authored stories. And so what we do is we collect folk tales and several versions and then retell them in our own way so they become our material, folk tales being in the public domain. And so that, coupled with a love of flowers, I live out in the country surrounded by flowers. My husband is a fantastic gardener, and I tag around and do the vegetables, but he's really the flower gardener.
And what kind of research did you do to develop these stories for Blossom Tales?
Well, the research is book research, and I used the invaluable University of Illinois Library. And even with this incredible facility that we have, they had to interlibrary loan many of these books, because if you look at the bibliography in the back of the book, there are many old books, 19th century books, and those from the beginning of the 20th century. And even the books have some sort of wonderful names. I'm going to read some of the names of the books from the bibliography. 101 Legends of Flowers, or La Mythologie des Plantes, a French resource, which is a great resource, sort of the resource at the beginning of the century of flower stories. And there haven't been collections of flower stories for a very long time. There are lots of collections of animal stories, but not of flower stories. And so these, the Wildflower Fairy Book is another resource, which has a nice name. So these books from, that one's from 1905, I feel that I've rescued them from the, you know, deep in the stacks of the library.
Yeah, yeah. I can almost picture you going,
yeah,
blowing off the dust. Well, once then you've got the research and you've looked into folk tales of flowers, then you've got to craft those stories so that, you know, in a sense, they're yours and you're retelling them to us in the pages of this book. How do you go about doing that, crafting, you know, taking a story and then sort of recrafting it?
Well, first of all, I choose stories that I like. That's my first criterion of which stories will be in this collection. But I also wanted to find stories that were from all over the world. And I believe I've got five continents plus Hawaii represented here. And so it was a balancing act of finding stories that I could find corroborated versions. You really want more than one version. You really want two or three versions of a story in order to retell it. And so once I did that, then I tried to tell the stories in a very spare manner, because what I knew I wanted to do was have a very short story, each a double-page spread on the book. It's a 32-page picture book. You know, some books, you just, the number of pages follow the content of the book, but a picture book must be 32 pages or 48 pages, 16, defined by 16 pages, a signature. But this is a 32-page picture book, which is what I had in mind. And so I have 14 stories, each one a double-page spread, and then a little front matter in the book and a little back matter of the book. So they're very sparely told. Mm-hmm. But I also like to use elements of the culture from which the story comes, because oftentimes when the story is first told, it's told within the context of that culture, and everybody knows, for instance, that Muhammad was traveling around the desert, but and that might not be mentioned in the stories in their original form. But I have to make that clear in the story. So I'll add bits of culture to each of the stories.
Yeah. And Mohammed, he comes into this story, he comes into this book thanks to the geranium, correct?
That's right.
Or, yeah. So maybe you'd share that story with us.
Right. Normally I tell the stories, but since I have the book right in front of me, I think I'll read it. The geranium. The Prophet Muhammad was traveling through the desert, gathering his people together to teach them about Allah. After a long, hot, and dusty day, he stopped at a stream to bathe. He washed his linen shirt. Then he climbed up the bank and spread his shirt to dry on a common lavender mallow plant. While the Prophet slept, the mallow plant blushed to think it was honored with the shirt of Allah's holy messenger. Muhammad awoke refreshed. When he took his shirt from the mallow bush, brilliant red blossoms, exhaling a spicy aroma, bloomed on the plant. The common mallow plant became the first geranium.
Very nice. You know, one of the things I enjoy about this, and I don't know if you thought about this, but, you know, reading through these stories, they're a really good length so that somebody like me, you know, I might be able to tell that story to mm-hmm. someone down the line, you know, if we're standing in a garden and, you know, and there's an opportunity to tell a little story.
Right.
I might be able to do that. Did you have that at all in mind?
Well, I did. And also the idea that storytellers might use this, you as a storyteller, anybody as a storyteller. And because they're so short, it's really the bare bones, the skeleton of the story. So I think they're ideal for being embellished so that storytellers can make these stories their own and add details and add events even and, you know, make them longer. But since you mentioned standing in the garden, what had happened when I first collected these stories and retold them is I found that my garden was populated by all these characters, by dragons and saints and dwarfs and the prophets. And I wanted other people to have these characters in their garden because I really felt all this company there. And it never got crowded, but I invite them into everybody else's garden
really
so that my garden doesn't get crowded.
Well, you know, we hear about theme gardens, you know, like period gardens or a medicinal herb garden, that kind of thing. But we could have a folklore garden.
Yeah.
Why do you think we continue to enjoy folk stories?
Oh, they're archetypal, I guess. They're the basis for our literature. It's what we grew up on. Some of us, not everybody, but whether one does grow up on them or not, they're the canon. They're the early canon of our literature. And they're, you know, before they were literature, before they were written down, they were oral stories. And that's, you know, that's a very dynamic form, oral stories, and they can change. And they're invited to be changed and made to be one's own. For instance, a story from Puerto Rico might be taken to, you know, as far away as Russia and use the elements of a Russian culture. You know, people traveled all over the world. These stories traveled with them. They became their own and became, you know, one with their culture.
Hmm. You want to tell another one?
Sure. Shall I choose?
You choose.
Or do you want one in particular?
Well, you choose. It's only fair. I kind of chose the geranium, there,
okay.
Didn't I? Yeah,
okay. I'm going to tell the tulip from Devon, England. A kind old woman lived in a thatched hut surrounded by brown tulips, for that was the color of tulips in days long ago. Each autumn, Granny planted more tulips, and each spring she weeded and watered and sang to them. While singing a soft lullaby one moonlit night, she was joined by a chorus of tinkling voices. Peering closely, she saw that tiny fairies fluttered among the tulips, and inside each blossom a baby fairy was cradled. A pink fairy with a silvery voice sang up to Granny, "You have given us cradles for our babies. Thank you. For that we will paint your tulips." And the fairy danced away on fluttering wings. Granny thought it was a dream, but the next morning there were no brown tulips at all. They were all blushing pinks, strawberry reds, and buttery yellows. Shortly after, the happy granny died peacefully, and the fairies planted more colorful tulips and tended her grave. If you are in a tulip garden at night, you may not see the fairies. If you listen closely, though, you can still hear them singing their babies to sleep as they rock them in their cradles, thanks to Granny's care all those years ago.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Patricia Ruby Powell, Blossom Tales, Flower Stories of Many Folk.